initial plan was going to be that we would get people into our studio, provide them with a nice quiet environment. They'd record that. We'd just kind of sit with them initially and give them some sort of guidance and then tell them how best to pace it, etc. We then do some very basic edits for them, maybe put a jingle on for particular shows, do a little bit of editing, take out the ums and the ahs.
Hi, I'm Paul Miller and this is Digital Workplace Impact, where we investigate and explore the ideas, practices and people that are impacting the new digital worlds where we all work. Digital Workplace Impact is produced by the Digital Workplace Group, a strategic partner and boutique consultancy covering all aspects of the evolving digital workplace industry through membership, benchmarking and boutique consulting services. And if you'd like more information, visit digitalworkplacegroup.com. So today's episode is a little bit postmodernist, I suppose, because it's a podcast episode about podcasting. Well, it's about how to start a podcast and how to go through all of this inside an organization. Because what I've noticed is that quite a few major organizations are having really successful pilots and programs of podcasting as a new style of communication within their organization. So I thought it'd be great to focus on that in an episode today. So I've been talking to Mark Parkinson of Nationwide Building Society. Nationwide Building Society is what you would call a mutual society. It's a financial services company based in the UK. And Mark is the Digital Channels business partner. And basically, he's the person who set up the podcast at Nationwide. And I really enjoyed talking to Mark to find out exactly how they'd gone about it, how they'd kind of made a few choices that they then revisited, how they're still evaluating the feasibility of it. It's a little bit more work than people think when they start, which is all useful learning, but they actually discovered also how powerful a communication tool it is. And I can't see why any small, medium-sized, or even large and large organization wouldn't be looking at podcasting as a 21st century communication and engagement tool. So here's my conversation with Mark Parkinson. It's great to be sitting here with you, Mark.
Thanks, Bob.
Over here in Nationwide's beautiful offices down here in the City of London. We've got amazing views of old London and new London surrounding us, and we're here at a DWG member meeting, which you guys have been hosting, and it's been fantastic to have the experience. What beautiful offices you got.
Yeah, it's a great environment. It's been great to have you here, Paul, for us to be able to host you in our central London location. It's not somewhere I often get to come, but yeah, it makes a change from the Swindon headquarters.
Great. And so, Mark, your title is Digital Production Partner at Nationwide. So what does that mean?
So really, it's a role that's evolved over the last 6 months. We were effectively, myself and a couple of colleagues, content partners, predominantly looking after the intranet, looking after governance, working with the business areas to help provide kind of great, engaging content. That's changed really over the last few months, and as we've introduced new channels, webcasting, sort of live events, video production, and also podcasting, that our role has taken more of a production element and also a bit of a director element there, picking it up here. So that's been a real change for us. So rather than just advising others on how to produce content, we've been actively producing that content for the organisation. So there's been a cost save in that for us, and it's given the kind of the agility and the flexibility to kind of create that content when we need it.
Yeah, and the thing that really kind of intrigued me, which is what this episode's about, is podcasting within organisations.
Yeah.
So this is our podcast about podcasting. And I think it's really interesting to see the way podcasting is starting to kind of take a role inside different organizations, and going to be talking, you know, it's great to be talking to you. Got a part of the show as well with JP Morgan Chase and their story. So
tell me why Nationwide started to think about podcasting.
Yes, we don't, we're always looking at different channels, and podcasting had been on the radar for some time. We ran a trial for another application, which was a comms on mobile application, and we got a lot of feedback from that people would like to see potentially podcasts on the app in the future. That didn't go any further, actually. It's something we've paused for a while, and we'll look at that again in the future. However, we took that away, looked at other feedback we've been getting from comments on our intranet, where people were saying they were quite interested in listening to audio, hearing kind of leaders' voice, other subject matter experts across the organization. So we took the opportunity to run effectively kind of a test and learn, 6-month period, fairly low cost, using a commercial podcast platform that we could effectively white label for Nationwide. So very low kind of cost of entry for that for us. And the idea really was to go and kind of out there to a mix of different kind of content providers, really, hoping that most of it would be kind of user-generated, that we'd get some of the employee voice that we don't necessarily hear in the organization all the time. So we're very good at getting leaders in front of cameras, doing live events, very familiar with kind of getting those kind of weekly emails from leadership, etc. But often some of the subject matter experts who are working in particular interesting fields, sort of tech talent, new technology, fintechs, etc., don't get an opportunity to describe what they're up to.
And it's often the case that organizations think of video, and there's been video around for quite a while. What did you see particular downsides to video and potential upsides to podcasts?
So I think with video, what we were seeing were quite a few fairly lengthy live events, particularly supplemented with some very short kind of pithy marketing or campaign based video. But what we were missing were those kind of 10-15 minute informational pieces. And we're also aware that people had been saying, is there stuff that we could listen to potentially while we're on the commute, stuff outside the office? But really a big driver was people saying they wanted to see stuff on mobile, and we're not in a position yet to offer video across mobile within the organization. So actually podcasts and audio seemed like a really potentially easy win for us to be able to try and explore that market, really, and see if what we were hearing actually panned out with the analysis after we'd run it for a while.
So what is it, what's involved in starting a pilot, and now I know you've moved into kind of post-pilot phase?
Yeah, so initially we approached a number of different vendors. We just took a little exercise internally to validate those and see which of those potentially would work for us. And we settled on a platform called UStudio.
How do you spell that?
UStudio. Very simple platform. Had a very simple back end. There was a registration process that we could then moderate and manage. So it was important to us to make sure it was only Nationwide employees who had access to the tool. Although we were very careful to make sure that content wasn't confidential or commercial in nature. The ease of being able to set that up meant that we were able to promote that quite rapidly. We only wanted to run the pilot for 6 months, and we thought it was quite important to actually get those sign-ups on very early.
Okay. And technically, where do you start? Do you have the kit? Well, how do you record it? What's the...
Yeah, so we had a little bit of investment. So we already had our TV studio that was set up for video. We have effectively a radio room. So Nationwide has a radio station that goes out to our branch network.
Okay.
There's a small room that has an ISDN box. It has mics. It had headphones. Effectively, all we were missing really was some kind of simple to use microphones that we could plug into laptops, into Macs, into other devices, just to capture that audio. The initial plan was going to be that we would get people into our studio, provide them with a nice quiet environment. They'd record that. We'd just kind of sit with them initially and give them some sort of guidance and tell them how best to kind of pace it, etc. We then do some very basic edits for them, maybe put a jingle on for particular shows, do a little bit of editing, take out the ums and the ahs.
What platform do you use for the editing?
So we were using Adobe Audition. So we looked at a variety of different tools. We already had Audition in our sort of Creative Cloud suite. We were familiar with it, so actually it was kind of a logical way of doing that, and enabled us to kind of quite easily do the edits and mix that down then to an MP3 at the end to host on the platform. Mm.
And how did you decide what content to put on it and length of the podcast and so on?
Yes, we were very open, actually. We were keen that we did get those subject matter experts and people who were passionate about what they wanted to do and people who weren't forced into it.
Like what would be a typical subject, you think?
So something that came up very early was people wanted to put learning material on there. So we had a request to put a new show together called Learning Matters that would cover particularly kind of leadership learnings, ways to empower our leaders with tools to better engage with the colleagues across the society. we then had other people coming and say, well, I want to come and talk to you about data, or I want to come and talk to you about what we're doing on infrastructure. We're spending a lot of money at the moment. Resilience is a big issue for many banks and building societies, exactly the same for Nationwide. Lots of work going on our infrastructure. And we thought it'd be nice to get those guys in and speak in layman's terms, actually, about what things meant, like terms like speed layer and middleware, etc. So we approached those kind of people. But then also, once we advertised it, we had a lot of people just coming forward saying, could I do a show about X? I'm a graduate. I've just come in on a graduate scheme. I'd love to run a show that talks to other graduates about what the scheme is and what opportunities there are to kind of work together. So those things happened organically. And I think as the pilot ran for a while, more and more people kind of latched onto that. And it was important to us that it was people that were passionate. We did validate them. So we did spend some time initially to kind of sit down and what was their plan? Who was their target audience? Were they committed to keeping that podcast running? And, or did they have a sense that it may be a 5 or 6 show run and that's the end? A few of them we did turn down because there was duplications. A few we got people to kind of work together on the podcast because they had similar ideas. But I think we got to the stage by the end of the trial, I think we had 35 different shows and somewhere in a region of 280 episodes. So we had a lot of content. Content wasn't the problem.
So much more content than you could possibly have got on video.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the breadth of subject was.
And so what was the best idea that came up and what was the worst idea?
Yeah, so I think we found things like wellbeing. So we've been launching some wellbeing campaigns now probably for a good 12 months. And actually the podcast on wellbeing went down extremely well. Lots of listens, lots of downloads. As I said earlier, we had the Learning Matters podcast. Again, that was very, very popular. We also started doing podcasts of some of our events that we ran where the audio actually would stand alone and be listenable to. They were very, very popular for people who couldn't get there or didn't have time to watch the video. And again, people who just wanted to listen on the commute. So they wanted to be able to listen to quite a lengthy podcast for their drive into the office. What didn't work so well, unfortunately, was a lot of the SME content. Stuff that we thought people might have found interesting.
When you say SME, what do you mean?
Subject matter experts.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
So the stuff we thought people actually would be really keen on, finding out about our data layer and other things that were big topics for the organisation, we found it was very niche groups that were watching those. And the guys were putting a lot of effort in to produce these.
Right, so it was basically the host was really interested.
Pretty much.
And that was probably, and possibly their mum.
Yeah, absolutely that. So yeah, it was unfortunate, I think, that some of the things we thought might have more reach than they actually did. I think people were electing not to listen to that.
And were you judging success purely on numbers of listens?
I think that was definitely a factor, but we also have a number of measures internally around understanding, belief and action. And what we wanted to see was whether people who were listening to our podcasts felt that they were being better empowered within the organisation. And whether they felt that they had a better understanding of some of our success measures and some of our principles. And an analysis afterwards did show that. So there was a marked increase in those individuals who had listened to podcasts on those subjects, felt that they understood that better than those who hadn't been exposed to the podcasts.
And were you trialing different durations?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we went from the gamut from kind of quick 5-minute overviews through to hour and a half epics.
Right.
Around particular. But what we found, the sweet point again on analysis was people were really looking for the material that was around about the 5 to 15 minute.
Oh, right.
Nice bite sized chunks with a few outliers for those people who tended to commute, who were quite happy to listen to something longer. They could just start at their journey and end when they got to the office. But yeah, anything that was kind of beyond the 30 minute was really struggling to get consistent views.
And did you find that people understood how to download this onto their phones? And
we did have comprehensive instructions.
Okay.
I think when people were downloading it onto their own personal devices, it was less of a problem. I think if they were trying to do it on a corporate device, there were sometimes some issues around downloads or some steps or some authentication steps. We set a requirement that you had to register using your Nationwide email address, and we made that very, very clear. The number of people who then tried to register with their own personal email address and then having to go through additional validation steps was quite high. So we found it wasn't as simple as we would have liked it to be, and the fact that we had to have the validation meant that people couldn't just download it and start consuming the episodes immediately. There was a delay as we kind of moderated and managed that, which would have been nice to avoid that, really.
And does Nationwide have external podcasts as well?
We don't. No, we don't. So at the moment, we have nothing that's kind of member-facing in that space. So this was really was a very much kind of a trial
And
internally.
And what surprised you about it?
I think it was the passion of those people who really did get behind it. I think people who like podcasts really like podcasts. And we kind of had an inkling that was going to be the case from some polls we'd run on the internet. Would you be interested? And it was very much a kind of a Marmite feeling around it. People either love them or detested them and would never
detest them. There are people who detest podcasts.
That's probably maybe a bit too strong, but they were very passionate that they wouldn't be listening to nationwide based podcasts.
Do you know why putting aside the people who are passionate, and obviously I'm one of them, what is it about people who don't kind of like it?
I think we had some feedback that people were concerned that the audio quality wouldn't perhaps be great. They were concerned that the subject matter might be boring. You know, they might, even some people who perhaps listened to external podcasts and found those speakers engaging were concerned about the internal stuff wouldn't be of the same production standards and therefore something that wouldn't grip them. We managed to change that opinion of a few people, but there were still others that said, no, I really don't want to listen to work-related material either in the office or out of it in an audio format.
I don't want to have anything to do with Nationwide when I'm at work, when I'm at home, whatever.
I get enough communications during the working day.
I
really don't need to be listening to stuff internally after hours or before.
And did you have anybody who has become a little bit of a celebrity through this?
Not necessarily. I think we've had certainly people who had been kind of in the leadership space. A couple of those have really adopted podcasting, so they moved away from doing regular monthly webcasts.
Could you give me an example?
Yeah, so Mandy Beach, who heads up our frontline colleagues, so the branch network effectively, she moved across from doing a kind of 50-50 split between doing a video update monthly to an audio-based update for her team, and that would be shared internally on Yammer and other platforms. And she did a really great job of promoting that, and we had a great engagement from her team, to the point that they were kind of clamoring to kind of get that on that platform. So they were really great kind of early adopters and have continued to want to use that platform. Again, another leader who looks after our regulated advice teams. Again, a great speaker. And I think that's the common factor between the two of them, actually. Whether they're on audio, they're on video, or they're communicating across other channels, they're great communicators and great storytellers. And I think their material gripped people. It was interesting. People wanted to follow it along.
Mm. And what was it about Mandy that drew her more to the podcasting than video?
I think something with the simplicity.
Right.
So before,
just
for
easy
video.
As
you... Yeah, before, you know, occasionally we'd be getting stuff that had been submitted on a camera, on a phone, sorry, submitted through, and it was always a bit kind of dodgy. The audio wasn't particularly great, but with just a few little pointers, actually getting an audio recording on something like an iPhone, particularly the little plug-in mic, was actually really good quality. And I think she found it easy to be able to find a quiet space at home or in the office where she could record that at her own time, rather than feeling obliged to come in and do a kind of a full studio production for those videos. It was less important of her surroundings. You know, we didn't have to kind of present her in a particular light. She was able to just be genuine and share that message with her wider team.
Yeah, and that's one of the benefits, isn't it? It's a much more kind of mobile, flexible, simple to kind of produce, so long as you can get good audio.
Yeah, absolutely.
There seem to be so many other obstacles to getting good quality video. You know, you either record it on a, you know, your own device with all the implications of that, or you basically got to spend quite a lot of money to kind of get properly produced material with all of that.
Yeah, and I think that was a learning for us, actually, is that there is a limit to what you can produce locally. I mean, if you look at any of the kind of professional commercial podcasters, you know, they're in a nice studio environment, but actually the amount of time they then spend editing. We had a few where they wanted to invite guests in and try and intersect different sections into their podcast. Actually, the editing required on that, and to do it to justice and to balance sound, is really quite difficult. It's not something you can easily do yourself. So I think that for us became a bit of a burden sometimes of trying to produce these to a particular standard. Whereas those individuals who were happy to record their own as a single hit and kind of run that way, they worked particularly well. But yeah, there was always a risk. And I think that's one of the findings we did get to at the end of the initial part of the trial, was we were spending a lot of time producing the material, putting jingles on balancing the audio, taking the ums and ahs out, perhaps correcting some mistakes that people had done when they recorded it, or they may have taken some couple of takes and wanting us to kind of stitch it together. And we did find that for most of the podcasts, the listening figures didn't justify that effort in production. So we've got to the stage, we're going to continue our podcast trial for another 6 months, but we're actually going to take a slightly different view and actually try and engage leaders more. So a bit like we mentioned, Larry and Mandy have done a great job in kind of engaging their teams. Let's see if we can do the same with some of the other leaders rather than some of the subject matter experts or quite niche subjects. So that's going to be our major focus moving forward.
Any indication on the cost of running a pilot like this, or if you can't be specific, maybe how much cheaper is it than running a similar thing on film?
Yeah, and it was quite interesting, actually. So given the overheads of managing the platform and the time the cost in time of then doing edits to try and produce a very professional sounding audio file, it actually ended up costing about twice as much as it costs us to webcast to the organization. So it actually was a more expensive during the trial to produce an audio file of the sufficient quality and to be able to distribute that and promote it and do all the additional work needed to make sure people were listening to it than it was to get similar or greater reach with our live broadcast platform. So some of that was down to just the sheer amount of effort. Some of that was down to us learning the tool set and kind of probably not being as effective with it as we could have been. And some of it probably over-engineering some of the podcasts and providing too much post-production work. So the manpower to support that, even just having somebody to let them into the studio, potentially sit there with them and go through it, to do the edits afterwards, to take a debrief, to get that loaded onto the platform, to find sufficient imagery for a new show, all of those things added up. When you then compared it to the reach of a webcast versus the reach for a given episode, with some exceptions, it was effectively twice as expensive to produce an audio file.
Yeah, and that's interesting. So you presumably were surprised that it was actually not as cheap as you'd expected it to be.
Very much so.
Right.
Yeah, that was a big surprise, a bit real eye-opener.
And are you then therefore streamlining, should I say?
We have. So rather than us producing now those materials, we've actually reduced the number of shows. So actually we're really focusing on the stuff that does have that engagement. It's difficult to predict that and to know, because some stuff has really stuck that we didn't expect it to, and other stuff we thought would fly really, really hasn't. But effectively, if it's not a leader, if it doesn't align to our communication principles or isn't to do with one of Nationwide's kind of primary goals, we're classing that as very much kind of a self-produced podcast. And we'll support the guys with that. We're looking to open up the app to provide a mechanism for them to upload their files directly into it. We would then just moderate those and then push them live to a show. So that would absolutely cut out all the effort involved in those shows. We probably still can continue to support the leaders in their podcast production. I think it's important that they are presented at a particular level of a particular quality. But we're actually hoping that the quality doesn't drop necessarily with the right kit and the right environment. I think if people are submitting them themselves, they should still be absolutely fine.
So is there like a sort of average cost per episode that you're looking for?
Ideally, it would be great to kind of bring that down to as few pounds as possible. I think we were at the stage where we were almost costing like £8 a listen for a podcast versus significantly cheaper costs for a webcast production when you take manpower, overheads, cost of equipment, etc. So really we're trying to get the cost of production as low as possible and the amount of usage as high as possible, and promotion is a big part of that. So it hand in hand with going back to the people submitting their podcasts is that they need to do a bit more self-promotion. There's only so much we can do centrally within the wider comms team, and it really is down to them to really do that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're right. I mean, things like, you know, standardized, you know, intro and outro music that you use, standardized kind of audio intros, outros, and just kind of, in a way, getting rid of, as you're saying, some of the things that are nice to haves or can seem like nice to haves, but it's also it all adds in a bit of engineering. Really what people want is, I think, kind of good audio and decent content reasonably well.
That's certainly what we've had the feedback is. They're less interested in it being called a fancy image for the show and overly exuberant jingles. It really is about the content.
It sounds like Nationwide are going to stay with podcasting as an enduring
I think so.
Channel,
I think,
do you think?
Yeah, I think we've got the next 6 months, so we're going to continue it for another 6 months with that focus on leadership and business priority messaging to see if it just acts as another channel in the mix that people can elect to use or not. I think we then feel that we've probably done everything we can internally to promote that and to look at every possible content type that we could host there. We'll then take a review after that six-month period and see if it is something that we would continue with. We are looking at developing other apps, and it may well be that in the future it might be that we can have our own internal kind of podcast hosting, which would obviously save on licensing costs. So that's something that we're looking at all. But I think we'll be led by the metrics at the end and see what people are saying about it. I know we will have people who are disappointed, potentially, who are those kind of really strong advocates, but it has to pay for itself in the mix of platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are a limited resource. And if we're getting our message across better and cheaper using our other channels, then sadly, podcasting wouldn't be something we'd necessarily add to the mix.
Yeah, so you're kind of refining it, simplifying it, learning from the pilot.
Absolutely.
And so on. How does the leadership responded to the idea of podcasting?
So some of them have adopted it. They weren't early adopters, but we've certainly got to the point once they could see that people were on the platform. Larry and Mandy had already started going out to their communities. We've had a number of others now come in their particular communities across the society, covering a whole range of different kind of subjects. They've already signed up to it. They're already doing that. The challenge for us now is to go out, perhaps some of the more traditional leaders across the organization who don't necessarily even webcast currently or use any of our additional channels, to try and get them to engage across podcasts. And we did have one occasion where one of our leaders who usually is a fairly slow adopter of technology, but we had a particular issue on a given day with a webcast platform. So we offered her the opportunity to use the studio to record a podcast instead. And her community absolutely lapped it up, and she was brilliant. She was absolute natural at it. And I think, you know, that's an example where people don't necessarily know, unless they've had a go at doing it, that actually it can be quite a compelling platform.
Mm. And I suppose, have you noticed that it has an ability to kind of affect the culture of the organization?
Yeah, definitely. So I think one of our metrics on the understanding, belief and action, one of those measures was around awareness of the culture. And definitely those folk who had been listening to our series of podcasts felt that they knew more and felt more connected to the organization in that way. So I think that was a great kind of result. And again, kind of shows that the podcast can perhaps reach areas that other comms don't necessarily reach. So I think we were pleased with that. It's just the volume, I think. So I think at the end of the six-month period, we were just shy, I think, of 2,500 registrations. And that's an organization of about 18,000. So still quite a lot of work to kind of reach those others.
But I think you'll probably find, just, you know, from my own experience of hosting a podcast, is that episodes that you recorded a long time ago will get listened to.
Yes.
A long time into the future. So actually you'll build up over time as well, which has, I think, one of the interesting things about it. So when and where do people listen to the podcast?
Yeah, so again, interesting. So from a time perspective, it's probably a fairly traditional kind of bell curve throughout the day, but definitely with a bit of a long tail. So people were definitely listening it later in the evening than they were consuming any other kind of comms in the organization. And there were a number of people who were listening to it early in the morning, one assumes on the commute or when making breakfast or something. So between 5 a.m. and 10 p.m. was our kind of core viewing time. But as you'd expect, yeah, the main part was during the working day. We had lots of plays, lots of listens. But yeah, generally people were listening to podcasts of around about 15 minutes. That kind of content was the stuff that was popular.
Great. What's next? Is the next?
Yeah, the next step for us is definitely.
We're still in pilot mode, then.
We're still in pilot, so an extended pilot.
Okay.
You know, we didn't kill it off after the first. So yeah. There is promise there. I think there's more work to do. We've got to drive some of the cost out of the process.
Mm.
Potentially find more engaging content that we can promote better. I think some of that is aligning it with our other comms channels. So at the moment, podcasting sits very much in its own little isolated space. There's a little bit of crossover of stuff that's going on more widely across the society, but it was fairly niche. I think we need to make it a bit more of a core platform it kind of resonates with the other storytelling and the messaging that's going on across the society. And that way, I think we'll get a little bit more cross-fertilization.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on what you've done.
Thank you.
I love the way that you've taken the step, incorporated it, piloted it, learned, refined, changed, seen where it's going to find its place inside the organization. And thank you so much, Mark, for sharing the nationwide podcast story.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Digital Workplace Impact is produced by the Digital Workplace Group, a strategic partner and boutique consultancy supporting more than 100 leading businesses and public institutions to advance their intranets and broader digital workplaces through benchmarking, research and practitioner expertise. For more information, visit digitalworkplacegroup.com. And if you'd like to listen to previous episodes of the show, go to digitalworkplacegroup.com/DWG_podcast. This is Paul Miller wishing you well until next time.